This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You've reached another Joy 94.9 podcast.
The hottest event on the LGBTIQ calendar is the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras.
And this way it is. Joy.
Thanks to our Joy sponsors, Virgin Australia, who'll fly you there, Airbnb, who'll put you up for your stay, and GoGet, who'll drive you around in style.
Then have the time of your life celebrating the Mardi Gras Parade with a view money can't buy at the Joy 94.9 VIP broadcast.
An unforgettable experience you don't want to miss.
For a chance to win, donate $5 to Joy via joy.org.au.
Enter as many times as you like. There's no limits.
The more times you donate $5, the more chances you have to win.
But do it before Feb 17.
T's and C's apply. See joy.org.au.
The joy of summer.
The joy of Mardi Gras.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. I'm Ruby Susan and I'm excited to be back for 2017 here on The Informer with current affairs for our community. Tonight we'll be looking at the history of Australia's alliance with the United States and what challenges the Trump administration may pose for Australia. I'll be speaking with Professor Tim Lynch, the Director of the Graduate School of Humanities and Social Sciences and Associate Professor in American Politics at the School of Social and Political Sciences at the University of Melbourne. Fighting with the United States, coming up on The Informer. Listening to The Informer, Joy's news and current affairs program with me, Ruby Susan. The Australia-New Zealand-United States Security Treaty is the 1951 collective security agreement which now binds Australia and New Zealand, and separately, Australia and the United States, to cooperate on military matters in the Pacific Ocean, though today the treaty is considered to apply to conflicts worldwide. It was formed in a response to the threat of communism during the Cold War, following the close cooperation of the three countries during World War II. After Australia had come under attack from Japan, the United States provided defence and support after Britain refused to spare any troops currently engaging with the Axis powers in Europe. The ANZ-US treaty bound the signatories to recognise that an armed attack in the Pacific area on any of them would endanger the peace and safety of the others. To this day, Australia is the only country that has fought by the US in every conflict, including Vietnam. Currently, US Marines rotate through facilities in Darwin under the terms of an agreement which was signed by the former US President Barack Obama and then Prime Minister Julia Gillard in 2011. The deployment is able to grow to 2,500 Marines, but does not allow the United States to build military facilities on Australian soil. About 2,500 US Marines are due to arrive in Darwin in April this year as part of a six-month rotation, the largest number since the US and Australia signed the agreement. The 2017 rotation will also include four Osprey Tilteroy aircraft, five Super Cobra helicopters, and four Huey helicopters. The United States also operates signals, intelligence, and radar facilities in Australia, including the satellite ground station commonly known as Pine Gap near Alice Springs. In 1966, the US and Australia signed the Pine Gap Treaty, and today one of the station's primary functions is to locate radio signals in the world's eastern hemisphere. Australia is also part of the intelligence alliance, the Five Eyes, which involves close, trusted collaboration between Australia, Britain, Canada, New Zealand, and the United States, and the sharing of raw and finished intelligence, including defence and human intelligence. I spoke with Professor Tim Lynch, the Director of the Graduate School of Humanities and Social Sciences, and an Associate Professor in American Politics from the School of Social and Political Sciences at the University of Melbourne. Professor Lynch has also published a number of books on the United States administrations and teaches two popular electives at Melbourne University, The Great Power Rivalry and US Foreign Policy. And we're talking about American foreign policy and the future of the Australian alliance. Hope you enjoy. What have the last 2 weeks been like for you? Has it been very interesting, very unsettling?
Well, I am still, like many others that have studied the United States their entire professional careers, still surprised that Donald Trump became president. I think, and indeed many of the things he's done in the not even a month in, have surprised me in terms of their speed, sometimes their lack of thinking through immediate consequences. That's all quite surprising. I think the other thing to say is that as a transition, usually every 8 years, certainly every four, has been doing this for 230 years. It's got through civil civil wars, world wars, something close to race wars, and it, it always manages to get through them, and the Constitution always continues. So any fear about Trump against an understanding that the American system really is pretty robust and is able to resist when too much power gets concentrated in one of its branches, and that's we've seen an attempt to do that now. We'll see a counter-attempt, because we've not seen it already, to prevent that happening. So I'm both surprised but also reassured about where we're at.
I'm glad to hear that someone who has got a lot of knowledge on the subject is reassured. I think we could all do with a bit of reassurance at the moment. There has arguably been more talk about the Australian-US alliance in the last 5 days than there has been probably since 9/11 and the Iraq War. Do you think that the alliance is something that is well known and understood by the citizens of both the United States and Australia?
I think there's no... If you ask an American, and there is polling to support this, if they ask the list that one, two, three countries are America's greatest friends, as far as they have any notion of Australia or where it is or what it is, they would say Australia is almost a unique advantage you have in America. If you're Australian, you are just trusted as an ally. And there's a very good reason for this. Australian troops have bled red with American troops in every major war for the last 100 years. So they're tied together in terms of some of their most important foreign policy decisions.
Historically, how significant is the role Australia has played in the United States foreign policy?
Well, it's very important, if symbolism counts, that the willingness of Australian prime ministers to send Australian troops into every major conflict and war that America has fought in the last 100 years is symbolically very important. It doesn't mean that these actions wouldn't have happened if Australia had said no, but the fact that a very close ally that is democratic, that it shares many of the same values as you, is prepared to fight, it's been enabling for Washington. The obvious one here is Vietnam, who's the only major Western nation to fight alongside America. South Korea also did, but it was of great consequence that Australia did, and also that Britain didn't. It's one of the few wars that Britain decided to step aside. So if you wanted a balance sheet of what America owed Australia, I think America would feel it owed Australia. And even Trump, even though his historical grasp is
tenuous,
even he, I think, would understand that it's not simply a business partner, and you take on a transactional basis, you do one deal and then you screw them over for another. This is a long-standing relationship between two Western democracies, and you jettison that relationship at your peril. And I think both sides would acknowledge that.
It is interesting that you raise that there's always been a tit-for-tat, because, of course, there have been times, as there would be in any treaty that's gone back since the 1950s, where things have been friendlier and less friendly. So, for example, after the Cold War ended, things did cool down a bit between Australia and the United States, and more so when President Bill Clinton issued a missile strike on Iraq without informing Australia, despite the fact that Australia still had a naval vessel in the Red Sea. Now, of course, the attitudes have been different under different prime ministers. Labour has historically been more likely to not question the alliance, but to say that this is not a blanket. This does not mean we have to step in, and this does not also mean that we should not be providing our own security.
Yeah.
The Australian and the United States militaries are very intertwined. The Royal Australian Air Force has flown in Syria, and Australian troops have helped train the Iraq Army. So, obviously, it seems like the country's security agreements will endure, but what do you think will happen with trust and confidence? There's the risk of that being damaged over the events of the last few days. What do you think consequences of that, if it continues, may be?
Well, I don't think the consequences are insignificant, but I also don't think they're likely to ruin the relationship. What we saw was a very robust exchange between two leaders, and these happen pretty often. What was weird is the fact that one of them was prepared to tweet about it afterwards. And that, in my understanding of the history of diplomacy, is extremely unusual. So if we can get past that oddity, I think what you will see is a reversion back to close cooperation, because it's just in both sides' interest to continue it. And they're not the first two guys to have a tiff. I mean, if you looked at Gough Whitlam, he's got to the early 1970s, but he and Richard Nixon didn't get along from different sides of the political spectrum. In fact, if you looked at Obama and Kevin Rudd, Obama was famously cool in Rudd's company. We know from history that prime ministers and presidents don't always see eye to eye. But also, America is the most powerful state in the history of the world.
Yeah.
It's worth saying that. And Australia just isn't. So whether you like it or not, true. Australia is going to have to. We call Australia middle power, which means it's much weaker than America. It's just kind of small to middle power.
Mm.
And the rules, as in the playground, are set by the bigger boys, the guys with the power.
Yes.
So Australia is always going to have to find itself adapting to America rather than the other way around. The ANZUS Treaty is 65 years old now. All it does is say that if Australia is attacked, if its security is threatened, America is obliged to think about doing something. Now, it means that every Australian government has to best guess on what America will do. It's not got a security guarantee. It's not like NATO.
Yeah.
And Australian prime ministers have been not paranoid about it being removed, but very sensitive because all they're doing is hoping that America will stay on side. So ultimately, Australia will have to do. It will have to adapt to the US rather than the other way around.
Speaking of big powers, really, in the last 20, 25 years, Australia has actually become very close and quite reliant on another superpower, China. And, of course, what is happening now between the United States and China is that there seems to be escalating tensions over a number of incidences, including the South China Sea, including claims on two isles that fall within the East China Sea and a claim currently by Japan mm-hmm. and China. So I suppose Australia depends on the United States for its security, but it does rely heavily on China for our economic prosperity. We do not want to choose between the two, as they are currently waging a bit of a contest to see who's going to be the biggest boy on the playground, to use your analogy.
Yeah.
Do you think the United States will take that into consideration when they look at the role they want Australia to play in any coming conflict?
Yes. I mean, I think reading it realistically, Australia has two choices. It pursues its security with its big old friendly buddy, the United States, or it pursues economic financial wealth by increasing trade with China. Now, both come with certain consequences. If you buddy up so much to the United States, China gets suspicious, well, then your trade relationship with China is ruined. If you try and move towards China out of your own economic self-interest, you jeopardize the relationship with the U.S., who then don't trust you.
Mm-hmm.
So Australia has to choose. And usually, because states are run by human beings, and as a general rule, I think human beings tend to go with people not simply out of economic self-interest, but because we like them, we share their interests. That's the same with states. So Australia realizes, of course, some very important economic self-interest by allowing China to buy its resources and to trade with it, number one trading partner of Australia. But it's also friends historically with America, and it's friends in a deeper way based on values and shared notions of human progress. These are all warm and fuzzy, but they're shared much more with the U.S. than they're shared with China. So the choice in some ways is not a clear and obvious one, and I think ultimately it will go with friendship and maintain a strong trading relationship with China, but not much more than that. I mean, this is a complicated question. If you looked at the impact of Chinese immigration in Australia, it's transformed and is transforming in many positive ways mm-hmm. the nature of Australian society. But it's also, I think, having an impact on China. China, after several hundred years of being quite closed off to the world, is suddenly highly receptive to states like Australia and to the US and elsewhere. And that's changing the nature of Chinese society. And eventually, one would suppose, change the nature of its political culture as well. So it's not all about Australia and the effects of being stuck between two great powers that is of consequence. It's also the impact of states like Australia on China as well.
What I've heard people are concerned about is, ideally, we would be able to remain neutral in such a conflict. So far, Australia has resisted pressure from the US to conduct freedom of navigation exercises through the South China Sea.
Yeah.
Do you think we can continue to resist that while maintaining an alliance? Can we continue to say we actually cannot take a forward position in this issue with the satellite tracking that we do have at Pine Gap, as well as the Five Eye Alliance, which is a English-speaking alliance between New Zealand, Canada, Britain, Australia, and the United States? So these things can continue, but do you think it is possible for Australia to say we cannot be active in aggression for the sake of our trade and still continue the alliance?
I think it's a hard question to answer without a concrete example of what would make Australia have to make this decision. I think as a general rule, if you look at the pattern of history, if it's a military issue, Australia has sided with the United States, even though the United States has not always reciprocated. When Australia intervened in East Timor in the late 90s, America showed no great interest in the action. Mm. So America doesn't always come to the table, but Australia always comes to the American table. So if it were outright overt aggression, if China attacked Taiwan, for example, or actually claimed the South China Sea and all the disputed islands, that would force, I think, Canberra's hand into siding with the United States.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. Professor Tim Lynch speaking to us about American foreign policy, the history of and possible future of our relationship with the United States.
Trade is important for any nation, but the wonder is of how states are prepared to act against their simple trading economic interests and to fight bloody horrible war on the basis of ideas. And the First World War, Second World War, very good illustrations. I don't think we've entirely transcended that. So all the overlapping trade connections and intercultural dialogue and everything else that marks out the Australia-China relationship, that doesn't guarantee perpetual peace between both states. War is a permanent condition, permanent feature of the international landscape. And their magnitude changes, but not really their frequency.
Hmm.
Now, again, this is not to say that war is guaranteed, but I think history suggests to us that if war comes, sides tend to cohere around ideological concerns more than they do trade interests. And Australia, I can't see, would be much different from that.
A recent study done by the public policy group, the Lowy Institute, actually found that 2016, the people who decided that America was our most important partner and people who thought China was the most important were at a dead heat. So 43% for both countries. In 2014, 48% said the US and only 37% said China. So there has actually been an increase in looking at China. And of course, Australia, I think, again, about 40 to 50% of Australia, if not more, said that if Trump is president, we need to step back because we cannot follow with somebody who seems to be looking for aggression or looking to begin fights. And I find it interesting that you mentioned that you know, America doesn't always come to the table, because I think one of the other big examples of that was in the 1960s when Indonesia annexed West Papua, and Australia have a lot of concerns about this, and the United States in the end agreed to possibly aiding if they felt the Indonesian troops were coming through to Australia, but where there were so many conditions on their agreement that it was practically useless. So I suppose that's the other question. While the United States has been able to rely completely on Australia stepping up behind them for matters of security and international conflict, Australia doesn't have that reassurance. So I suppose, do you think Australia should also be ensuring their own defence independence?
They can. The problem with, I mean, that's great in theory. The problem is it's how you make it work in practice. That Australia is a small country. I mean, geographically, it's vast. It's tiny in comparative terms, and therefore vulnerable this notion of invading Australia. I think, I mean, that's a stretch to talk in those terms. But it's been a very strong determinant of Australian foreign policy thinking that we've got this enormous buffer zone. If you live on the east-south coast of Australia, what protects us is, of course, the alliance with the world's greatest superpower, the United States, but also thousands and thousands of deserted land, which makes it very, very difficult to invade. Now, that feature of Australian character is pretty set, the geographic feature. What will change is the commitment of the United States to its own protection. When you talk to military guys, they war play this scenario. What would an attack from the north look like, whether it's Chinese or some variation of a Chinese threat, in the same way that Japan attacked Australia in the Second World War. And that, even though it sounds fantastical, it still colours perceptions. It's one of the reasons I think that regardless of Trump, Australia is always going to feel happier and more secure if it knows the world's preeminent military power is in its corner. And differences between individual leaders is not going to change that basic dynamic, I think.
But do you think it is possible for Australia to refuse to fight with the United States and for the alliance to continue?
I think it's possible, but I think it's unlikely. Australia's been prepared to project its limited power resources into the Middle East on America's behalf. So there's every reason it would do so in its own backyard. So, again, it's highly contingent on what the nature of the war, of the conflict would be. I don't actually think Trump is that interested in fighting military wars. He talks a very tough trade war game, but I don't think he's actually got much interest in invading anyway. He said he was going to bomb the SH-1T out of ISIS, but that's quite a narrow, limited objective. He hasn't got this idea he's going to democratize the Middle East or regime change. If you go back to W. Bush, he had this idea you could actually change the nature of government in whole regions of the world. Trump doesn't have that.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to fight and kill Chinese men and women. He just wants a better term for guys that he thinks have got a bum deal because of the trade relationship with China. That's where his emphasis is going to be, and that doesn't mean mobilizing men under arms to fight in Asia. It means waging more aggressive trade negotiations or even trade wars. So perhaps the consequences for Australia are not as severe as we might imagine.
What kind of an impact do you believe a trade war between China and the United States would realistically have on Australia?
Well, again, depending on how deep and lasting it was, potentially they could be extremely significant for Australia. If it meant a withdrawal of Chinese direct investment into the Australian economy in terms of buying its resources and its property, then the consequences could be severe. But the consequences are so severe also for China. I mean, it needs carbon-rich resources. It's in Africa for many of the same reasons it's trading with Australia. To jettison these sources wouldn't be, it's not something that China would do lightly, and that counts in Australia's favour.
New Zealand was suspended from the Australian-New Zealand Treaty in 1986 in response to instituting a nuclear-free zone in its territorial waters. Yeah. So this has shown the United States is willing to say if you won't cooperate on particular issues, it's out. Is there, look, I have to ask, do you think there is a chance that choosing to remain neutral or choosing to be uninvolved in conflict between the United States and China under a president that does seem to act quite impulsively could result in a break in the alliance?
Yes, potentially. The New Zealand example is an interesting one. The difference is that the politics, although we think of the states as quite similar, Australia and New Zealand, the actual politics and national security interests are different. And New Zealand has a greater freedom of action, perhaps because it's more distant and smaller than Australia does. So is it possible that you could get a David Lang style, this is the New Zealand a prime minister that effected the non-nuclear policy and really upset Washington in doing so? Mm-hmm. Could a Turnbull do that or a Bill Shorten do that? Well, possibly. I just don't think there's much domestic reward for doing so. And I'm not sure what the key issue would be that Australia would refuse to cooperate with America on, because their level of cooperation is so great, especially on national security. So my sense is, I know it's unfashionable at the moment, I don't think Trump is going to make a huge difference. He's loud, he's brash, he's a very different style, but that might well mask a good deal of continuity in the relationship between our country and the US.
And if nothing else, the last week or so has reminded us American senators and congressmen absolutely adore Australia.
I'm British and Australian. I'm a citizen of both countries. And I thought being British gave you a real head start, an advantage in any situation in America, except until I did it as an Australian. And you realise Americans really only have a positive notion. When you say the word Australian, they only have warm, fuzzy thoughts of friendship and alliance and fighting together. It sounds trivial, but it's a huge asset to actually have an alliance grounded in friendship and a sense of shared identity. Is very, very important.
Thank you so much for your time, Tim.
Good to talk to you, Ruby.
Good to talk to you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
And I'd like to say once more thank you to today's guest, Professor Tim Lynch, as we discussed the history of the Australian and United States alliance and where it might take us in the future. This evening's show was written and produced by myself, Ruby Susan. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.